Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet Minnesota's American Legion Department Commander, and we'll get a wrap-up report on the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Combat Aviation Brigade deployment. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard is well-equipped to accomplish our missions both domestically and overseas. In order to be prepared for all types of environments and challenges, we train as we operate. Sometimes overlooked, however, is the impact that the training and daily operations we conduct has on the environment. I'm proud to say that for many years, Camp Ripley's Environmental Office has been at the forefront of conservation and stewardship efforts, not only within the state, but the nation. The Environmental Office conducts numerous ongoing studies on wildlife and plants to document the quality of wildlife habitat found at Camp Ripley and to investigate relationships between military activities and sensitive wildlife species. To date, these studies have demonstrated a high degree of compatibility between military activities and wildlife species. For example, while it has long been thought that timber wolves are sensitive to wilderness dwellers unable to adapt to human activity, a radio telemetry study was found that Ripley wolves breed and raise their young relatively close to centers of military activity and are in fact quite adaptable. One of the great success stories of the Camp Ripley Environmental Office is the identification and tracking of the bear population within Camp Ripley Reservation. Through the 20 years of the program, Camp Ripley personnel have been able to identify nuisance bears and also to locate bear dens on the post. This year, as in past years, school groups, journalists and visitors of all kinds will have the opportunity to visit a bear den on Camp Ripley. They'll see the bear's natural habitat firsthand and get a look inside the Environmental Office's efforts to balance the needs of the military training with environmental stewardship. For more information on the Camp Ripley Environmental Office, as well as the Environmental Classroom, log on to MinnesotaNationalGuard.org and click on Camp Ripley.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Department Commander for the American Legion of the State of Minnesota, Jim Kellogg. Jim, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jim, every year I get to meet a new commander, and you've worked your way through the chairs, and now you're the commander for this year and next. And just want to introduce you a little bit to the audience. You're from southern Minnesota.
Yes. I live about 7 miles off the Iowa border. I farm down there. My hometown's Teope. That's my address. Population 99. My American Legion affiliation is with the Adams American Legion in Adams, Minnesota.
So you're down in Maurer County?
Maurer County, yes.
And Jim, I understand you were a member of the United States Air Force.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I joined the Air Force and served from 69 to 73. Career field was aircraft radio repair. Served here in the States. I worked on B-52s and 135s in Michigan and two different places, Kinchel Air Force Base and K.I. Sawyer Air Force Base in Michigan. In between, I spent a year in Nakhon Phnom, Thailand, where we worked on everything from choppers to you name it. A lot of my time was spent on bench work. A lot of my time was spent going to school because while I was over there, I was required to have a top-secret crypto access. So
how was that tour in high school? Was it relatively safe?
There was a lot of worse places you could be at. We were just a few miles from the Laotian border, clear up in the northeastern corner of Thailand. Our base didn't get hit while we were there. It got hit before and after I was there. But a lot of things were going on there. Our primary mission there was search and rescue. So the esprit de corps was very, very high there. You were the people that went out. We supported the individuals that went in country and picked up the guys that were shot down or had to punch out aircraft and that kind of thing. So the esprit de corps, you had a mission, and it was a very good mission, a very positive environment to work in.
And when you got done with your time in the Air Force, you went back home to farm?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah, I'm back. I went back and I bought my my family farm from my dad. And it was a dairy farm, and I dairy farmed there until for about 20 years. And then the kids all left, and the cows left about the same time, and now I'm crop farming and feeding some cattle and doing things a little different.
Yeah, and serving on some boards, I understand.
Yeah, I'm involved with the community, different boards in the community. In the county, I'm in the Maurer County Soil and Water Board. I'm in the local elevator board, and I'm also on a Maurer County cattlemen and Maurer County corn and soybean growers.
You're not letting any of those weeds grow underneath your
feet, are you? No. I stay busy. I stay engaged and involved.
And, Jim, I understand you've been a member of the American Legion Post in Adams, post number 146, for almost 40 years.
Yes, I joined there. I didn't join right after I got out of service. I felt, well, I took advantage of my GI Bill. It was through farming. We took night classes, adult ag, they called it back then, and we'd go three nights a week to school. So my time was very limited to raising a family and trying to make ends meet during those years. So I said, no, I said, I joined when I got done. So 3 years and almost 4 years after I got out, then I joined the American Legion in Adams. I've been a member there ever since.
And you worked your way through several posts there.
Well, I initially, when I was, a neighbor come over and asked me to join, and I told him I would, and I did a few years later, and his uncle come after me. Then about 2 days after I joined, wanted to know if I'd be their chaplain, and I served that office, and I virtually had some office in that Legion post, be it an elected officer appointed. As I've been the gambling manager down there for about 30 years now. So yeah, I've had some affiliation with the post for most of those years.
Jim, sounds like you stay pretty busy.
No, keeps you out of trouble most of the time.
That was a key word there.
Yeah.
And when did you decide to work through, did you go through district and up to state?
Yes, we started, actually what got me started in it was a friend of mine and we started doing parades. We had a very active color guard down there at our home post, and we did a district convention parade, and I kind of liked what I saw, and we did a few more of them, and I got asked to take an office in the district, and from there on, I worked my way up to the chairs in the district, and then this is my fourth department office now this year. So, yeah, I've been just working our way up through it through the years and enjoyed it, and I got asked by some people if I would consider running for department commander, and I decided now was the time to be doing it, and it was fortunate that I did get elected to this position.
We're speaking with the American Legion Department Commander Jim Kellogg on Minnesota Military Radio. And Jim, how long have you been commander now?
Of the Department of Minnesota, I was elected in July out at Redwood Falls, and I'll serve until the next July, and that election then will take place down in Rochester. That's where our state commission is next summer.
Jim, you got to watch last year's commander and the commander of the year before, and
yep.
So you had an idea of what's going on. Have you got any special goals or things that you want to accomplish this year?
One thing we're working towards this year is to try to attract more of the families to join our American Legion family. We are an American Legion family, the Legion Auxiliary Sons, and now we've got an active group of American Legion riders in the Department of Minnesota, and our goal this year is to try to solidify the families and project the family image more so to the young, to hopefully attract some of the younger veterans. Their family time is extremely limited and very precious to them. And we feel that if we could show that we are a family organization, that hopefully we'll be able to attract them to come and consider joining us. We're kind of light on younger veterans right now joining our organization. Our biggest membership right now is the Vietnam era veterans, and it took many years to attract many of these people to the organization. So it's a work in progress, and we're trying different avenues to recruit more members so we can maintain our voice that we have in our legislature and try to protect our veterans' benefits as best we can.
Jim, seems like that's a perennial issue. When I joined the VFW and the American Legion back in the 70s, the World War II and the Korean guys were saying, where's all your buddies from Vietnam? Yeah. Of course, they were busy going to school and getting married and having kids and didn't have time available. And now here we are, and we're the generation that's that's at the top, Vietnam, and we're saying, where are all these Gulf War veterans? Where are all these young veterans? Yeah. Of course, they're going through the same things. They're
exactly.
Pretty busy. And they'll come around when they get to it.
Well, it seems like the younger families now, there's so many more options for them to be involved in with their schools and the sports and things like that that weren't always out there when we grew up. There's a lot more to it now for them.
So Jim, how many posts and what's your membership in Minnesota?
Our membership in Minnesota, we're trying to achieve 81,000 this year. We're trying to stop the decline in membership that we've been undergoing the last several years. But our goal this year is set by national, and we agreed upon it as 81,000.
So you're feeling pretty good about that?
I think it's an attainable goal. we're working very hard. We've got a lot of good people working for us across the state of Minnesota. We've got some people who are very engaged and goal-oriented people that are doing their best as volunteers to achieve the goals. Right now, we're number one in the nation. We've been that way for the last 3 weeks or so. So hopefully we can maintain that position throughout the year.
Jim, we got to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the mission of the American Legion in Minnesota and some of the great work that you're doing. We're speaking with the American Legion Department Commander Jim Kellogg on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking to the Department Commander of the American Legion, Jim Kellogg. And, Jim, just to refresh our listeners, you were a member of the United States Air Force. You served in Thailand. You got out of the Air Force and went back home to Maurer County and been farming ever since. Been a member of the American Legion down there for almost 40 years and went through all of those posts, went through the district posts, and the last few years you've been at the department level, and now you're the new commander of the American Legion in the state of Minnesota.
Thanks for having me.
Jim, can you share with our listeners, what's the mission of the American Legion in Minnesota?
One of the primary missions, there are several, but primary mission that I see in the American Legion and Department of Minnesota is our veterans and getting the health care benefits that they have all so duly earned through their service. We've got a very group of gifted individuals to represent our Legionnaires in Minnesota, and they don't represent just Legionnaires. They represent any veteran who so chooses to have the Legion represent them. We've got two gentlemen at the department staff, and beyond that, there's another 33 that advocate through the American Legion for veterans' rights and health care benefits. And that's one of the big causes we have going on. It's a constant battle with the cuts being made at the national level back on spending. And it can become a real battle for some of these veterans to actually find and get the what they have coming to them from as a result of their service and the disabilities that they've encountered over time. So that's one of the primary things I see that we accomplish in Minnesota, and it's done through numbers and members of the organization. So as we try to grow, we'll have greater representation and have a greater voice. And our voice is what counts as far as getting their point across and getting the benefits that these people have so much deserve.
So if our veterans have any issues related to their service to the country and the military service to the country, they go see their county veteran service officer. They'll help them file a claim, and then they can come over to the American Legion, and your folks will help them document the claim and advocate for them and make sure that they get a fair hearing in front of the folks at the VA that make those decisions.
That's the process that follows, yes. When a veteran goes into his county veteran service officer to file a claim, he can choose a veterans organization to represent them, and because of the size and scope of the American Legion and the amount of advocates that we have on staff, it's quite often they do choose the American Legion to be their advocate for them when their claims, as their claims being processed, and sometimes they're reprocessed. We also have a staff working at the national level of several people that work on claims and referrals. But they're a very dedicated group of people. We just had our state conference of county veteran service officers. And the county veteran service officers themselves, in order to be certified, they have to be certified to take on a case that a veteran has chosen the American Legion to represent. And it's a very involved testing and learning process that these county service officers go through to be certified. They're actually tested, and the tests are sent in to the national organization. So when the American Legion represents you through a county veteran service officer, you can be assured that that veteran service officer has been highly scrutinized and highly educated in the job that they have. They're a very dedicated group of people. They're the county veteran service officers. The meeting we had a couple weeks ago I attended, these people aren't working for the money. They're working for the cause. And it's good to see people like that out there.
And they're out there studying all the time to make sure that they're up to date on everything.
Yes, they are.
Jim, I think one of the misconceptions that I commonly hear is that a lot of folks that have been asked to join the American Legion think, well, that's just a social club, and they just go hang out. And why should I join? What would you tell them?
There are many good reasons to join the American Legion. One of them is, like I just spoke about, is our mission with our legislators, and numbers count. when you go in with, you know, over 2 million members nationally, close to 3 million, and you start talking to your congressman at the federal level, that has clout, that has meaning. And the state level, with, you know, 80 plus thousand members near to it, that has meaning to them. That means there's families in Minnesota that are there.
And as the department commander of the American Legion, you join with the other Veteran Service Organization commanders in what's called the Commander's Task Force.
Yes, we do.
And combine your numbers and get together and discuss veterans' issues that need to be pushed up at the state legislature, and then go up and represent all of those numbers from all of your membership, whether they're active or not.
Yes, we do. That's a very good working relationship they have between the veterans organizations in Minnesota. We meet monthly and discuss the issues and bond together and develop a program and then go and present it to our state legislators in hopes that they'll listen. They've done a pretty good job of listening in the past. So, when a veteran, you got to realize as veterans, we're 2% of the population of this country. We aren't big in numbers when you look at percentage-wise, but when you look at cause and the numbers that we have going in, we do try to make a difference.
We're speaking with the American Legion Department Commander Jim Kellogg on Minnesota Military Radio. Jim, your past commanders have had a commander's project, and the one that we've heard about the most from the American Legion is Legionville, because the old barn was about worn out and ready to fall down. It's been completely replaced. Is it done?
The building is virtually done. There's some trim work to be done on the interior of the building, but the structure is complete. In fact, it was repaired again from recent storm damage up there this summer, but it's up and running. It's a beautiful facility. Many people work long and hard to raise the funds to get it to where it is today. I don't know the total dollar figure there, but it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars that went into this building, and it's a facility that can be used year-round. We use it in the summer for training our youth that do crossing guards. The Highway Patrol uses it some for training. The Civil Air Patrol now has started to use it some for training. This very weekend now we're hosting a disabled veterans deer hunt up there. So there's a lot of good things happening at that facility.
And that's up in the Brainerd area, and you partner with Minnesota State Patrol to have that Legionville School Patrol Training Center in place. And our listeners should stop in and take a look, shouldn't they?
Yes, if you're ever in the area, it's about 7 or 8 miles northeast of Brainerd. It sits on a lakefront. It's several hundred acres there. It's actually a pristine setting, and it's a very safe and secure place to have your children go and learn about safety.
And if they Google Legionville, it'll come up right away on the internet, and you can find out where it is. Jim, we just got a few minutes left. Every department commander at the American Legion has a commander's project. What's yours this year?
My project this year is through the Brain Science Research Foundation out here at the BA Medical Center. There was a chair established out there in brain science research about 25 years ago. And they studied disorders and diseases of the brain. They recently developed a pain clinic out there separate from this facility, and the pain clinic would like to develop an association and research with the brain science facility. And my project is to raise funds to hopefully acquire a grant so we could further study what's going on in the brain as far as this pain. And the pain people are doing a real good job of getting people off meds, and they'd like to find out how the brain's reacting and why it's reacting the way it is and the changes are taking place. But it's been a real life-changing experience for several veterans that have been able to go through that program. So that's the intent of my fundraiser this year.
So they're studying traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder and trying to figure out how to make some strides and help our returning service members with those issues.
Those are ongoing studies. There's the PTS study that's out there now is the second study of that kind. It was federally funded. They have realized now with about a 97% accuracy in a one-minute test, they can diagnose PTS, and that's an awesome thing to be able to have that done for our veterans. It'll speed up them getting their claims through the VA and then hopefully in the very near future.
Commander, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Just remember every day is Veterans Day.
And remember the American Legions all over the state. You can add your voice to their voice when they go up on Capitol Hill and talk about some veterans issues for those that have served and risked their lives for our country.
We are a family-oriented organization, and we ask that your families consider becoming part of our group. Numbers build, and numbers maintain, and numbers make a difference. And you can make a difference by joining our organization.
Commander, I hope you have a great year and a lot of success, and particularly with your Commander's Project.
Well, thank you very much for the time.
Thanks for joining us today. That was the American Legion Department Commander Jim Kellogg on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll get a wrap-up report on the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Combat Aviation Brigade deployment. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
As Veterans Day approaches, you may find yourself asking what you can do to support Minnesota's military members, veterans, and their families. One way you can show your support is by purchasing a Support Our Troops license plate. These license plates are special because they are a gift that will continue to give year after year. Each and every day, as I drive my car, I'm proud to display a Support Our Troops license plate. So does my wife on her car. To purchase these plates, visit our local DMV or call 651-4-TROOPS. Drive home your support this Veterans Day.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Colonel Greg Thingvold from the Minnesota Army National Guard. He's commander of the 34th CAB, recently returned from Kuwait on a deployment over there. Colonel, welcome back to Minnesota and welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, it's great to be back in a couple different fronts. One, like you said, just be back here in Minnesota, away from the land of sand and tan, and then to be back on your show. Appreciate it.
Well, Colonel, it was a pleasure to talk to you before you went on your deployment and a couple of times where you were gone, and to surprise you a little bit at the state fair.
That's right. You know, it's a great way to just, you know, brag a little bit about our organization and sell what the Guard is continuing to do around the world today. And so certainly a privilege for me, not only as a commander, but again, be able to tell a little bit of the story.
Sir, can you explain to our listeners how many Minnesota Army National Guard troops did you take with you, and what was the mission? And you were attached to a larger organization over there and actually were the headquarters command of that. Can you explain that to us?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's hard to believe how time flies. It was about a year ago when we were getting ready to pack up and go to Fort Hood. You know, really expected the mission to stay the way the previous units had conducted. And it was a lot of bilateral training with the Middle East countries, not only Kuwait, but Jordan, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and some overwater training with the Navy. Well, that all still stayed the same, but you know, a lot started to happen in Iraq over there about the time we hit Fort Hood in June. So by the time we got to Kuwait, there was a need for an aviation task force up in Iraq. And so that was a little added complexity to the mission. But really, in the end, you know, it was good to be a part of that. The challenges were quite unique in many different ways. But again, it was the Guard being able to come in, command a, you know, a fairly large organization and provide capability to General Terry, the RSEN commander, overall in charge, not only as the RSEN commander, but the combined joint task force commander for all things going on up in Iraq. Very, very rewarding.
So when this deployment first came up, you are commanding 240 Minnesota National Guard soldiers, and you went to Fort Hood for some training before you headed for Kuwait, and your mission changed a little bit is what you're telling us.
It did, and so, you know, the Minnesota piece, we had the brigade headquarters out of here, about 120, and then we also had the assault battalion headquarters out of here, the 2nd Battalion, but they acted as a general support battalion over there, meaning it was just more than assault. You know, combat assault Blackhawks. They also had medevac and Chinooks, as well as air traffic control company in Kuwait. And then so our headquarters overall commanded about a little over 1,000, which then grew because of the things going on over there. So not only were we coming into theater, getting to know a new mission, we were also bringing in active duty units that were fulfilling an increased requirement for rotary wing aviation in the Middle East. And so it was a lot going on to hit Fort Hood, try to get to know units from about 8 to 10 states that we've never worked with before, see what and assess the capabilities that we bring to the table, and then try to use that 7 weeks or so at Fort Hood to hone in on those things that we know that we need to sharpen so that when we hit the ground, we can really hit the ground running. It's quite the story for any reserve component mobilization. The active duty sometimes gets the ice cream headache when they try to understand how we deploy and train, because they just don't understand that, you know, we come together and we don't even really know each other. And then in a matter of a few weeks, we're deployed.
We're speaking with Colonel Greg Thingvold from the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Cab on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Colonel, after you got over there and your command actually grew, you were combining Minnesota National Guard, Reserve, and active duty troops and working together on the mission for General Terry.
It is, you know, and one of the terms that was coined over there was one of the staff counterparts, an aviator who works for General, who's on General Terry's staff, but, you know, really coined it as a Compo 6 organization. So, you know, there's three components. There's the active duty, the National Guard, and the reserve component. We call them Compo 1, 2, and 3. Compo 1 is the active duty, 2 is the National Guard, 3 is the reserves. And I like that term, the Compo 6, because it doesn't matter where you come from. You know, we all come together and we execute the mission. We don't wear our compo, so to speak, on our sleeve. And also, I think, you know, just from a continual, you know, it's almost a I almost view it as a marketing opportunity, too, when I'm working under active duty, or if I've got active duty, in this case, I had an attack battalion, an active duty attack battalion working for me, is, again, really to show the guard or the reserve component capability. Because I think, you know, really in the end, I generally see that they're just always pleasantly surprised at the capability that we bring. I think, you know, just an increased level of maturity across the troops, but also an experience and a skill set that really carry the day to take on complex missions and really figure out solutions that get the job done. Very, very rewarding in that respect.
And, of course, all of those troops, active duty, guard, and reserve, work together, and it does say U.S. Army on all the uniforms, doesn't it?
That's exactly it. And sometimes, you know, you almost have to remind people of that because I tell you, we like to still kind of hoard our toys, so to speak, and not let anybody else touch them, and especially when it comes to aviation maintenance. Sometimes prying those Apaches from the active duty hands so that our reserve maintenance battalion could do their thing, their maintenance on it. You know, it took a little bit of convincing, but in the end, you know, they saw the capability and it was a great thing.
Took just a little time to build up the trust that everybody could do a good job.
It is. It is. And the team earned it and then some.
Now, is flying in the desert, is that pretty hard on the equipment?
It can be. I mean, so the good thing is we're not doing a lot of off airport landings like dust landings or in the sand. I mean, we'll do that for training. But overall, when you're landing, you know, pavement, so to speak, to pavement, it's not too bad. All the aircraft over there have filters on the engine inlets. So the wear and tear that the engines can have is really cut down with the filters that we use. And so, you know, with the right equipment, they really operate just fine. Sometimes it's the humans in the front end of it that are the limiting factor.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about specifics and, you know, what a day or a week was on the ground over in Kuwait for you and your Minnesota National Guard soldiers. We're speaking to Colonel Greg Thingvold, commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Cab on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Colonel Greg Thingvold, from the Minnesota National Guard. He's the commander of the 34th Cab and just returned from a deployment to Kuwait. And, Colonel, you've been back now for about 30 days. How's it feel?
It feels good. You know, it's one of those things when you get on the front side of a deployment, you think, well, coming home will never get here. And then lo and behold, it does. And so life is pretty good. You know, it was nice to be able to come back home in time for my daughter's graduation. And then we just got done with her graduation party. So, you know, those milestones are nice to be able to make after being away from home for a long time. Good to be back.
Good timing to be home for your daughter's graduation. Didn't want to rest that. So, Colonel, all our soldiers come back in good shape?
It did. And, you know, again, it's just a blessing to be able to deploy, you know, not only the troops from Minnesota, in about 240 total, but, you know, having the cab, the size of it is, and then bringing in quite a few units to grow for the capability needs and operating really in a not-so-safe environment. The Iraq piece, I know we'll talk about a little bit here, is one that is pretty dangerous. And I would even say in many ways more so than it was when I flew there back in 07, 08. And to keep everybody safe and bring everybody home is very satisfying.
It's a mark of a good deployment in my book, sir, but I'm not judging. Mm-hmm. Colonel, we've been over there back and forth, a lot of units in and out of that that territory out of Kuwait for many, many years now. How were the quarters and the conditions on the ground for your soldiers?
You know, it's good. They're certainly going through a surge right now at Camp Buryan. Camp Buryan really was just kind of this transit station over the Iraq years, and so that's where units would go acclimate, get some final training in before they went up to Iraq. Well, now it's pretty much a home base, and so the Army, our sent, has really got to figure out how they're going to put money in for the long term to sustain, you know, what's going to be inevitably a pretty large footprint there at Camp Buryan. So for the most part, though, I mean, the troops have trailers that they get to stay in. Some do have to share rooms. And so overall, the conditions are good. They feed us well, and they got housing for us all. And the morale, welfare, recreation side of Camp Buryan does a great job with events and keeping the troops entertained, so to speak, when they're not doing their job during the day.
Sir, we went over there a couple of years ago to do a show from Kuwait, and I noticed that the chow halls were a lot better than anything I can remember in Vietnam, and the quarters looked pretty good, and there was coffee you could get and a base exchange, and there were a lot of 5Ks, and everything looked pretty routine, pretty organized.
It is, you know, and I tell you, to this day, it's kind of the same. You know, you still got the Starbucks, you got the green bean, and the post exchange there, while not the biggest, you know, it definitely has pretty much everything that you need. But it's okay to call home for 9 to 10 months, but not any longer than that.
You're just glad you're home.
Right, that's right.
Got everybody home well.
That's right.
Sir, if we could get back into the mission, you told us earlier that when you were preparing for this deployment and you went down to, was it Fort Hood?
Correct.
You had training in mind with the Kuwaiti National Guard and some other people, and about that time things changed over in the Middle East, and we learned about ISIL and ISIS and all of these people, and so by the time you got over there, the mission was a little different than what you might have been planning for initially?
It was, and so the need to have aviation capability in Iraq was there, mainly for the defense of Baghdad. I mean, it was, at that point early on, it was hard. I mean, people were predicting ISIS was going to come storming into Baghdad. So there was a requirement to provide some capability up there with some of our attack aircraft, and that's still there today. And so we had to get to know really quick what it took to sustain the aviation footprint up north, because the Iraqis don't make it easy. They require certain clearances and processes. Just even though they know they need us up there, they don't make it easy to over, you know, the country boundary of Kuwait and Iraq to sustain our troops. So it was a steep learning curve.
So on a day-to-day basis for your 240 soldiers in the headquarters command, the things that you thought you might have been doing were a little different than the things you had to plan for to make sure that you were supporting that effort up in Iraq.
It was, you know, and really the mindset overall that I had everybody think about is, you know, we need to provide an expeditionary capability to General Terry, the RSENT commander. The status quo of what we used to do in Kuwait, or at least what the aviation units did in Kuwait, really no longer cut it. You had to be prepared to go really anywhere in the theater, whether it was Iraq or Yemen or, you know, what were we doing in the day-to-day business at the headquarters to prepare the overall aviation organization to do what they need to do. One of the biggest things we did early on was put extended-range fuel tanks on the aircraft because, you know, back in the day in Iraq, you had bases. You know, from a pilot standpoint, every 10 minutes, there was a base you could go get gas at, and you had a lot of troops in Iraq. Well, it's not that way anymore, and so you need to be able to fly long distances for a lot of different reasons, and that's one of the first things that we did to try to change the landscape of what kind of aviation capability we were going to bring to the region.
So, Colonel, when you were taking your soldiers over there, you're representing Minnesota National Guard and the Red Bulls, and the Red Bulls have had a lot of deployments that way in the last decade or so. You had something to live up to, maybe?
A little bit there. You know, it's absolutely a proud tradition to be in the 34th Division, let alone state of Minnesota. We know number one, you got to be ready. And then when you're called upon, you want to be able to provide the capability. And kind of like we were talking before the show, well, whether, you know, or not we're part of the 34th, yeah, we would, you know, absolutely do what we can to give a good product. And but there is a proud tradition with the 34th, and it's good to be part of that. And I tell you, you know, for the, you know, even though the mission was a lot more complex and in some sense quite a bit more dangerous for part of the team, that's where we wanted to be. We wanted to be a part of that challenging environment and stay busy and be problem solvers for Army Central Command, let alone CENTCOM, General Austin, and literally the president.
So you had a little something to live up to, and from what I understand, you did a great job of it, sir.
It was good. You know, it's one of the things you look back on, and to be there in that moment, so new. No other unit will ever have that experience, to reintroduce rotary wing capability back in Iraq, and the team did it very well. Very proud of them, and Minnesotans can be absolutely proud of the Red Bull soldiers that come from the state.
Sir, what do you expect? What do you think the Guard expects about future deployments? I'm sure there's more on the way.
There will be, and I think, you know, just the way the world is going now, you never know when that next crisis event will come up. You know, again, that's the thing that while we don't see any large-scale deployments on the horizon, it could be there at the drop of a hat, but we know that there'll be some deployments ongoing over time, because it doesn't look like these conflicts are going away anytime soon.
Colonel, I understand that this deployment was kind of the cap off of the end of your career.
It is hard to believe, you know, and again, that's the uniqueness, well, at least for me, coming off of a deployment is retiring at the end of July and then looking at what's next. And so, you know, have been very blessed with quite a few individuals that have helped out connecting me, and it's that's the fun part. Really, I've been enjoying is networking, meeting a lot of new people, and know something very nice will come out of this.
And, sir, you've had a great career. You made it to colonel and just got back from a great deployment. What would you have to say to the young people listening today thinking about maybe a career in the Minnesota National Guard?
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things I never thought I would, you know, have a career in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And when I look back at the opportunities, the assignments, and I think more importantly, the people that have been great mentors in my life have come from the Minnesota National Guard and wouldn't trade it for the world, and absolutely is a great opportunity for those that might want to do it full-time, but or those that are thinking of serving. There's still absolutely great opportunities within the Minnesota Guard, Air and Army, for those who want to serve.
Colonel, I appreciate talking to you before, during, and after this deployment, and I hope the retirement goes well and you find another great career after this. And I want to thank you for joining us all these times on Minnesota Military Radio to talk about this deployment.
It's been great. I appreciate it, Tom.
This is Colonel Greg Thingvold, the commander of the Minnesota National Guard's 34th Cab on Minnesota Military Radio.
Joining me now from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System is Director Patrick Kelly. Director, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Director, it's fall, and I'm afraid winter's on the way, and I was out there for a normal appointment a couple of weeks ago, and I got a flu shot.
Well, good for you. Congratulations. We're encouraging people to get their shots early, so I'm glad you stopped by. It gives me a chance to talk about an event we have coming up, actually next week now. So 28th, 29th, and 30th of next week, we have our walk-in clinic. And what we do every year, we'll do it again this year, is in the flag atrium. You know, we'll have staff available for veterans who just want to come into the atrium, get their flu shot there, and then be on their way. That's for veterans. And really any time, as you did, Tom, if any veterans want to come in, they're free to come in any time. You go to their primary care clinic, and they'll hook you up with a flu shot, and again, you can be on your way. But our big three-day event this year is coming up next week, and we usually do pretty brisk business, so it's veterans take advantage of this. So.
Director, is there anywhere else the veterans can get their flu shots?
Walgreens has a terrific deal. The veteran goes to Walgreens and they take their ID, where they can go and get their flu shot for free. We do the reimbursement with Walgreens, and pretty seamless. It's happened that way the last couple of years. And so if you're not near the VA, you want to go to your Walgreens, veterans can always do that as well.
Sir, it looks like they need a veteran's ID, a photo ID, and a group code.
Tom, thanks for bailing me out there. That's exactly what they need. So,
but pretty easy right now just to come to your walk-in flu clinic. You've got plenty of parking with that new parking ramp out there and lots of people standing by, so it's a quick appointment just to get your flu shot.
Those are about our busiest days in the medical center every year, you know, where veterans come in. But, yeah, with the parking ramp and with available parking, we still haven't filled the parking ramp, so we'll be able to meet the need, and it generally goes pretty quickly, so veterans can move through pretty quickly. So that's a good way to do it.
Director, I understand that you're making the move for the compensation and pension clinic.
Yeah, you know, it happened Monday, Tom. So we have moved our comp and pen staff to the Whipple building, and October 22nd in the afternoon, 2 to 4, we had an open house, and so that was an opportunity for veterans to. And others who want to see it and see how we're doing the new process, but beautiful spaces, much larger than our current spaces, and so, over in the building we also have audiology and imaging, and so they can get a lot of those things that they need for their comp and pen exam all over there, get their travel adjudicated, and so it's intended to be a one-stop shop, and that started Monday, and it's been good, been successful so far.
So, sir, does that free up some space at the medical center?
Yeah, you know, what we're going to do, Tom, we have a very significant project, and the primary component of that is we're going to be building out our chronic pain management center. So this is a 24,000-square-foot renovation project. So Comp and Pen moves out. We're using the Comp and Pen spaces and some additional spaces nearby adjacent to that so we can build our very large chronic pain management center. And we anticipate, you know, cutting ribbon on that next summer. So it's a big project, but we're ready to get going on it. It's funded. We're ready to go, and that will give us a lot better and more options for veterans with chronic pain. We have a good program. We have a lot of staff invested in it now, but this will be actually hanging a shingle and having a nice dedicated space, be able to increase our residential program and provide even more services for chronic pain management for veterans who need chronic pain management. You know, that's the beauty of, you know, whenever we move things out of the medical center, administrative or otherwise, it gives us the opportunity to provide and fill a gap for a service where we need where we needed that space.
Sir, we're just about running out of time here. What's coming up Veterans Day at the Minneapolis VA?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. So we're having our event. It's going to be November 11th on Veterans Day from 14:30 to 15:30 here in our main flag atrium. And so it's going to be primarily for honoring those veterans who are here in the medical center. Can't get away, but we absolutely welcome other veterans or others who want to attend. Guest speaker is going to be Major General George Steiner, U.S. Army. He spoke last year. Great guy. 451st U.S. Army Brass Band is going to be here. So 2:30 to 3:30, that's November 11th.
Well, I hope you have a great event there, sir, and thanks for joining us again today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me.
That was Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Jim Kellogg, Colonel Greg Thingvold, Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Shalitow, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week for our fifth year anniversary show as we look back on 284 shows and ahead for another year of Minnesota Military Radio. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.